All right, we'll kick this off. This is Quentin Singleton again, your adjunct professor for the Intro to Sports Betting course, which is an executive education course with UNLV. We're here today to talk about the history of gaming, which is Unit 2 of the course. I'm here with Mr. David Schwartz, who, I could give your background, but I think, I will say I've looked to much of the work you've done over the years related to the gaming industry, particularly in this case, really the sports betting, as in many ways the seminal, or in some cases the sole source of like history of many things that we do in this broader industry. And it's been, for me, a great tool over a decade, 15 plus, almost maybe 20 years now. But I think maybe if you could just give for the audience, which is to kind of recap an executive education audience, and this, you're a UNLV person, so we're targeting a different audience, but in terms of what they look at and what they want to hear, but if you could just give a little bit of your background and how you became kind of a historian for the gaming industry in many ways.
Yeah, sure. My name's Dave Schwartz. Grew up in Atlantic City, New Jersey, worked in a couple of casinos there, and when I went to school, started studying history, thought it would be interesting to study the history of casinos when I was getting my doctorate from UCLA. And that's what I did, focused on that. And that dissertation became my first book, Suburban Xanadu, which traced the evolution of casinos in Vegas. Wrote quite a few books since then about a lot of different subjects. Probably two of the best known ones, I think, are Roll the Bones, which is a big history of gambling on the beginning of time, all the way to about latest edition 2013. And there's the original edition right there. And Grandissimo, which is the story of Jay Sarno and Caesar's Palace and Circus Circus, is another famous one. Yeah, Cutting the Wire. That's another one. And At the Sands, which is the Sands Hotel. And Boardwalk Playground, which is Atlantic City.
Yeah, all those great, man. And I highlighted and just flashed to the camera a couple of these things, but which one was first? You said Xanadu, right?
Suburban Xanadu was first, yeah.
Pretty sure I have that one on the shelf as well. And then you did Roll the Bones after that?
It was that, Cutting the Wire, Roll the Bones.
Yeah.
We kind of ran it small, yeah.
So like why did you call, and so Roll the Bones is the history of gambling. And for the listeners, if you really want to ever sit back and read through the millennia of history, which you will see called out in the presentation of the unit, this book has so much detailed information. Let me ask you, how long did it take to put this book together?
Took a couple of years.
Yeah. And then why, I know because I read it. Why'd you call it Roll the Bones?
Well, that was slang for rolling dice, and yeah. My editor liked it, and I guess it's also a Rush song, so
you get two for one.
Yeah. So that's all that.
So you kind of found your way into the history of gaming growing up in AC, studying it in school, and then finding your way to Vegas. As you work through all these books, you did a lot of work as well in statistics and data and really kind of building the body of knowledge around this industry. What have you found to be one of your most interesting or impactful works? Because it's, for me, I'm saying they're impactful because some of the things you wrote, and I still have them because they really were kind of the litmus test for many of those stages of the gaming industry or many of the topics. Like, what did you feel was the most impactful or even just the most interesting?
For me, I think it's Grandissimo, because before that, a lot of people didn't really know a lot about Jay Sarno, didn't know a lot about his role with Caesar's Palace and Circus Circus, and really in a lot of ways creating modern Las Vegas, definitely bringing the theme aspect into it, but also bringing the sort of fantasy, the idea behind what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, bringing that into it. That really, to me, that's something that I think is impactful because people still are talking about Jay Sarno now. So, I think that kind of helped a little bit to raise awareness of him and his role.
Yeah. And then like one of the themes that I constantly see even to this day, and one that I pulled out for the presentation for this course, for this unit of the course, and one that I also raise quite frequently in conversations to set the framework for what we encounter today, which is we still battle with this concept of what is gambling and what is gaming, and is gaming gambling? And ignore that we as an industry use gaming, but like,
yeah,
it's even taking place today. And I forget exactly where it is in the Roll of the Bones book, but I put it in the slide in the deck where a millennia ago, God, maybe like 1,000 or something years ago, there was the Book of Games. Does that sound right? Or the
Where they were
1,000 years ago trying to define which games were gambling versus just a game, because they wanted to set the tone for who in society could engage in gambling, if at all.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it just shows how games go back so far. I mean, the interesting thing is that the games themselves changed. So, except maybe sports betting, because people have been betting on sports since the ancient Greek Olympics and gladiator games and stuff like that in ancient Rome. And, you know, of course, chariot race and stuff like that. So people have been betting for a really long time. But the games themselves changed. The technology changed. So if we think back, you know, there was a time when dice were the biggest gambling technology. Mm. And then it was playing cards, which used block printing, which at the time was pretty technologically advanced in Western Europe and other parts of the world. And really, we see that continuous evolution as technology changes, gambling changes to keep up with it. So it's really not surprising that people are doing sports betting in a lot of innovative ways. And if we look back at history, that's always been the case.
Yeah. And that part's, you know, I think really interesting. So as I understand, a lot of the audience for this course will be from all over the world. Right. And so that's why I wanted to start with the history of sports betting first, is because it's a global, and if you will, a global sport or a global industry, and has been since 5,000 plus years.
Yeah.
And many of the things that are taking place, not many, I should say many, the things that were taking place 5,000 years ago, we're seeing still replicated in today's, like literally today's sports betting world.
Yeah. I mean, the idea is a really basic one. It goes back to, imagine two people. One says, hey, I can run faster than you. The other one says, want to bet. That's how it starts. You know, that's how it starts. Or this other, my horse can run faster than your horse, can race faster than your horse. Want to bet? That's how it starts. And really, it's the same principle that we just now take to modern times, where we have professional sports, leagues, all that.
Mobile phones.
Oh, yeah.
Or that PCs now. And that's evolving the way people bet all over the world.
Yeah.
But it still comes down to still what we saw thousands of years ago, or you saw and wrote about, is it's a competition. It's some type of performance or some type of skill, or people against each other, or people watching, the audience watching, bets on it, says who's going to win next, right?
Yeah, yeah. And what's interesting to me, too, is the way that wagering has kept pace with technology. So if we go back to the 19th century, telegraph gets invented, which lets you send information rapidly across distances, basically annihilates space and time as far as communication goes.
Yep. Okay.
Did not take very long for them to start using that to gamble on horse racing. And it's really interesting. And I went into this, I think, in Cutting the Wire, where they developed pretty much the ancestors of race and sports books. They called them pool rooms, horse rooms. Mm-hmm. It would basically be a room in a big city. And usually this was not quite legal, but they had a telegraph connection, and they actually would be getting the results of the race. And you would have an announcer narrating the race, which was really the first remote entertainment. And people were very excited. And at the time, they said, oh, my God, these people are getting up and they're screaming and they're yelling and they're clapping, and the race is being run 1,000 miles away. Well, that's what we do every day now when people watch TV or horse races or anything like that. So it's amazing that we didn't need television for there to be connection, or the internet, television, anything like that, for there to be a connection between gambling and that kind of technology. It started with the telegraph.
That's amazing. Technology is something that's constantly evolving, right? And so these things that we call gambling constantly evolves too.
Yeah.
So at what point, or do we ever taking the societal view, do we ever like stop trying to define gambling, or just continues to evolve and we continue to legislate it and prohibit it and allow it? I mean, does it ever come to a logical conclusion and we just say, it's all gambling?
Even where you have gambling legalization, some people still want to skirt the law to kind of blur the line, what is gambling, what isn't gambling. So, you know, I don't know, and I guess this will keep attorneys in business, which is good for them. You know, you're never going to have a definitive answer, is this or isn't this, because things always change. You know, and generally, I mean, the general accepted definition is you wager something of value on an uncertain outcome with the hope of getting a payoff, jackpot, whatever you want to call it. So the case of winning. And, you know, there has to be some kind of random element that neither you or definitely the person accepting the wager doesn't control. And that could apply to a lot of things. You know, if we want to look at it, raffle tickets are a form of gambling, but socially we say, well, no, that's okay because it's done in this way. You know, doing anything like that could be considered gambling.
Yeah, it's actually quite fascinating because, like, again, like, at least it is for me, like, we continue to battle with these concepts years and years later. All over the world, it's the same debate, right? So, well, if you look back, like, you know, your history covers the industry, it covers what is gambling, it covers like changes in technology, it covers like some of the movers and shakers, and you mentioned Jay Sarno was one. In that role as a historian, do any stories like pop out that were just like, this was hilarious, or this is a game changer? Like, which ones of those are coming right to the top?
Yeah, I mean, probably Frank Sinatra's Rise and Fall at the Sands is a big one, where he got the wrong person mad at him and ended up getting punched in the face, which hadn't really happened before. And then there's a postscript. So then he went to move to Caesars, brought all the high rollers to Caesars. Then a couple of years later, one of the managers at Caesars pulled a gun on him. So Sinatra had a lot of run-ins with people. Great singer, probably the best consistent draw in casinos over decades. You know, if you really want to look at, you know, obviously Elvis had an incredible run in Vegas, you know, Celine at Caesars. But could you kind of look over, God, from started at the Sands in 53 and kept performing into the 90s. You know, it's like 40 years there, and would bring the high rollers every time.
Yep.
So you could say he's, you know, and Wayne Newton got a standing ovation or gets a standing ovation every night. So he's in the conversation too. But, you know, if you look at Frank, who brought the big gamblers, it was usually him.
Yeah, I still love his album Live at the Sands.
Yeah.
It's good, right?
Yeah, it's great.
It's like one of those ones that I will put on to kind of see if I could just put myself back in that time to get a glimpse of what it was when a couple generations ago, or a couple decades ago, I should say, was really probably an amazing time in the city of Las Vegas.
For sure.
But, like, you know, I wanted to keep it brief and value your time, but is I kind of want to ask everyone, or all for the audience, I'll say, look, if you ever want to understand gambling on a global scale and what's happened in the major changes in time, some of which totally unrelated to Vegas, some of which related to Vegas, but impactful across the world in this broader thing called the gambling industry, you can't do wrong by reading Dave's books, that's for sure. And so I say that because I want to maybe take a moment to ask you, as I kind of do everyone on these podcasts, like, you know, you've played a central role, at least in my view of the world, but I think it's in many people's view of the world, you've played a central role in defining the gaming industry and providing us with the tools to learn and read and understand history is very important to where we are today and looking back. If you had to predict, and I don't want to, I know gaming has been maybe on the back burner a little bit, but if you had to predict like that next evolution, is what does that look like? Is it to be a little bit fantastical? Is it moving into like Web3, or like where do you see these next big evolutions coming?
You know, it's interesting. I think it might be something nobody can predict. You know, if back in 1970, somebody said, 50 years from now, a city in China is going to be the world's biggest gaming destination, and Baccarat is going to be the biggest game, They would have said, what do you mean? That could never happen. How could that happen? So I think the nature of gaming is that change, when you look back at it, it seems logical. You're like, yes, I can see all the factors that led to this. But beforehand, you can't really see what's going to happen. So, you know, I think it could be, you know, one thing that I think is going to happen as far as gaming and hospitality goes is you're going to have a decoupling of the hospitality aspect from the gaming aspect. And I've been saying this for like 15 years or so now. You know, if we look at the development of the casino resort integrated complex, first in Las Vegas, then Atlantic City, then on tribal lands, then on riverboats and other places in the U.S.,
sure,
in many jurisdictions around the world, you know, it really is this historical accident. I don't want, or, you know, just historical coincidence. It says, yeah, at the same time in Vegas, you have a lot of land available. You've got free or not free, low costs. I'm getting some messages here, so I'm getting distracted, but I'm not using my phone. Popping up on my screen, can't avoid them. You know, low cost air travel. We have a lot of things, air conditioning, all these things come together to say, hey, look, what if we tried gambling in this big air conditioned box connected to a hotel and a buffet and a coffee shop and a showroom and all that? And like that all comes together. And then that becomes the model. As people get more in tune with doing things remotely, that's increasingly becoming less together. So like, if you want to gamble, we don't have to go to a big casino, but we still like traveling. So I think you're going to see that. I think you might see companies, you know, just like some casinos outsource their sports books. I think you might see some companies outsourcing their gambling totally and saying, yeah, this is the such and such casino at our property. So, you know, I think you're going to see a big, you're going to see a divergence there with more specialization in the gambling aspect and then more hospitality.
I could definitely see the decoupling in that sense too, right? Because as technology advances, right, and as maybe the hospitality, entertainment, sports space continues to grow to scale, on a large industry economic scale, these industries are much bigger than gambling, even though gambling is very big.
Yeah.
You could definitely see that, and we do see that on the outsourcing on the casino side to some extent now.
Yeah,
and then to your point on the technology, right? Like I think a lot about the ubiquitousness of technology driving distributed access on a global basis 24/7 to gambling, gaming, whatever we want to call it, anywhere you are, effectively with some type of mobile internet data connection. And so when you're that and you're in that scenario, you're right. So technically what you could be doing is you could be sitting in, pick a part of the world, and as long as you have internet, you could be gambling right there. Right.
Yeah.
And that's what's taking place now.
It's interesting, too, because if you look at the development of sports betting historically in Las Vegas, I'll focus on Las Vegas, and I know it's had a different road in other jurisdictions, UK, all over the world, but I'm going to focus on Vegas. That's what I know best. Basically, you know, if we go back to the 50s and 60s, casinos weren't even in the sports betting business at all because of the tax situation. 70s, they get into it, and really, it's more of an amenity. It does not have, it was maybe 1% of total casino revenues. And some years they didn't make money because you had a lot of sharps, you know, and sometimes the bet, you know, the bets went against them. And really it was more of an amenity. Like, you know, Mr. G is a big craps player and we don't want him to leave to go
watch the game,
turf club or something. So let's have sports betting here to keep him happy. And even if he wins there, he's going to lose it back at craps or whatever. You know, you go from that to now where sports betting is becoming more of a profit center in and of itself. And it's like, hey, we don't even need them here. And then, you know, and at first I think people are thinking, well, we use the sports betting as a lure to draw them to the property. But then it's like, wait a second. We can still have a good business giving them the sports betting without them coming to the property.
Yep.
And if they want to come to the property for destination stuff, that's great. We're going to have a destination sports book like you see at Circa. That kind of stuff, but it's also profitable on its own.
Yeah, it really has gone down that evolution, right? So, you know, turf clubs, for the listeners, you're going to see noted in the presentation as well, where there was this separation, physical actual separation between places where you could bet on horses and sports bet and the actual like casinos. And at some point they were allowed to come together. Forget what year that is, but And that's when you started seeing sports books inside of casinos. Now, that's not the same sports books that we started to see here. Well, we saw the big ones first with like Stardust and some others, right? And then I would say kind of like the next evolution was probably in the 2000s or late 90s, where you started to see some of the first independents who were operating on behalf of some of the larger resorts. Maybe that was the 2010s, if I had to kind of like swag my decades right now. And then now that is almost commonplace, to get to your point about even casinos, but now it's even commonplace where a lot of groups look first to outsourcing their sportsbook operations to a third-party operator or partner. And some of the suppliers who just used to just kind of very, very much be just suppliers of slots or suppliers of systems are growing their services vertically. So they are also effectively, in a non-regulatory sense, the outsourced operator of the sportsbook for the location. So, you know, we're seeing that now, and what was 15 years ago uncommon has now become the standard, and particularly now that they're profit centers in and of themselves.
And it's interesting too, because all this revolves around the shifting nature in Vegas, at least, of the resorts here, where it used to be up until 1999 in the Strip, gaming made more money than non-gaming. It's since 1999, so going on a long time. Since 1999, more money has come from the non-gaming parts of the resort. So, in that thing, it's no longer that the hotel exists to feed the casino. It's that the casino's there. And yeah, we've got, I will grant one thing that's different from regular hospitality is you have big high rollers who come in, gamble, and that really changes things. But at some level, it's two businesses. One is keeping the hotel filled, the restaurants filled, the showrooms filled. The other one is casino stuff.
It's going to be definitely interesting, I think, is this next wave, because we have, kind of going back to the sports betting frame, we have, as the listeners have heard multiple times, one of the most rapid or rapidest expansions of sports betting as a regulated product that we've ever seen before. And the growth of the size is massive. So, you know, although this is in a sense US focused, I think that's going to now see this, what used to be sports and betting and race betting from all over the world, from Greece to Egypt to you name it, then coming to the US a long time ago, principally first in the form of horse racing, then moving into what we see today, about 100 years later. And now we're going to see, I think, this then, as an evolution, start influencing the rest of the world, as we're seeing the major operators here go all elsewhere, or we also saw operators and suppliers from all over the world come into the US in the last 3 or 4 years to tackle this market. And then they're going to take what they've learned here and then take it outside as well. And I think for me, I did to kind of put a pin in that is because we have regulated and grown so quickly here, it's driven all sorts of changes that in the history of things have taken much longer to occur. Business models, technology introductions, in terms of how we operate remotely or in person. And now we've seen that in 4 years just like massively go to scale. And because that growth here was so fast, I think historically it's going to have an impact on a global basis. Just, and it's not a US thing. It's more of like an innovation and speed to change in my mind.
I think so. And I think the pace of innovation is picking up so much. We also, another thing to factor in here is we have a much savvier customer base than we did even 10 or 20 years ago. So you have people who are much more, a lot more about sports and they know a lot more about betting. So that means there's a big appetite for new things.
That's great. Well, look, I know we kind of set this for about 30 minutes. We're coming up on it. I just want to say once again, appreciate you finding the time to jump on for 30 minutes and in terms of recent events. And as always, appreciate your historical library that I still reference. And hopefully the listeners will get my point that you got to go read some of these, because it really did change for a lot of people, and they are kind of the tomes that we still look to in the industry. I'm hoping you write another one. I don't know what
Hopefully,
it'll be on. I don't know what it'll be,
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, I hope I do too.
But I'm sure we'll see something soon. Well, I appreciate your time. I know you're a busy guy. I'll let you get back to all the pings on your computer. They very much appreciate it. I know the audience will, and all the work you do for UNLV and the industry.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Dave.